Hello, dear listener. Thank you for downloading, streaming, listening to the Spooky Doings podcast. My name is Rick Guzman. I'm an improv comedian from New York. And we're going to have fun today because we got two wonderful people joining me for an exchange of ideas and merriment. It's still early. I don't know what I'm talking about, but when has that ever stopped me before? Chelsea's on the show today. Hello, Chelsea.
Hello. I'm currently caffeinating, so we'll probably get more and more talkative and quicker and on the go. But yeah, it's Sunday morning, and
or we could just end up fucking ridiculous.
I mean, that's usually what happens anyway, whether I have coffee or not.
This is very true. And we have someone joining us back on the show today, who I'm very happy since we've resumed doing shows at our somewhat new home of Young Ethel's. He's become a regular on the show, and I wanted to perform with him back in the before times, before a lockdown happened, when I saw him at Megawatt wearing a Lost Boys shirt doing improv, and I went, that fucking guy. Have fun with that fucking guy on stage.
And that I like to imagine guy. A spotlight went on him and his hair was flowing and music was happening.
It was Dreamweaver was playing in the background. Yeah. Max Bank is back on the show today. Hello, Max. Oh,
hello. What an introduction. Thank you for having me.
That's a shoot. All of that is true.
Yeah, I know. I loved it. And to this day, I don't know where that shirt appeared in my wardrobe from. I just loved the movie. And one day that shirt was in the back of my closet. And the rest is history.
Probably with taxidermied animals given to Corey Haim by his grandfather in that film. That shirt just appeared in your closet. I don't know if there was a highly suggestive poster of Rob Lowe on the door of that closet, but I'd like to think there was.
There was definitely. Well, Joel Schumacher used to live in my neighborhood, so maybe he snuck in and set up my room in the dead of night.
I don't know if Max is bullshitting me or not, but I'm going
no,
to choose to believe
he did
that.
Used to live. I've met Joel Schumacher.
What did he do to your nipples?
Made them look better than ever.
And this is why I'm glad to perform with Max. So today's topic is one that came to mind, and I thought, oh, this would be a great conversation. And I've been wanting to get Max back on the show. So I'm like, all right, let's do a trifecta. Me, Chelsea, Max, talking about the horror movies about making movies. And I thought, I've never heard anyone discuss this. And that's how I stay on top. Number one in a field of one. So in the interest of chivalry, ladies first, Chelsea, what's your first pick on this topic?
So I'm curious if any of us will have ones that overlap. I think mine are not, well, one especially is going to be one that is not a surprise at all. But I brought two today.
Okay.
So the first one is, I don't think a basic choice, but it was the first one that came to mind, and it's my favorite one in its franchise. But Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
All
right. And obviously this is a spoiler heavy episode, I'm sure. There's only so much we can do. Both of my picks are rather old. But yeah, it's my favorite in the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And I recently rewatched the series, and that one just brings a new life that it very much needed after the previous two. And I just love how meta it is. The fact that it's Freddy, they're making this new movie, and how Freddy appears, and you have the actors playing themselves, but Freddy just somehow exists in this universe as well, is almost like formed from the movie. It's just really good. And I was like, that's, you know, I that goes along the realm of horror movies about making movies. I'm assuming both of you have seen it, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, big time.
Rick, what were your thoughts on it?
It's my least favorite of the franchise.
Oh. Are you serious?
Of the entire franchise?
Yeah. Yes. What?
Yes.
Whoa.
I don't like kids, so I put all of that blame on Miko Hughes. if Heather Langenkamp, cinematically, I don't know if she's actually a parent or not. That's not my business. But in this movie, if she didn't have a child, because Miko Hughes, we know him from this and Pet Sematary and Kindergarten Cop. I was just actively rooting against that kid, screaming at the top of his lungs. I like that Wes Craven came back and decided to flip things on it, and you get kind of a preview of what he's going to do with Scream in a couple of years. I like all the Easter eggs, all those other cast members that are there, particularly at the funeral scene for Nancy's husband or Heather's husband. You know what the fuck I'm talking about.
See, that's like in the movie, the realities are blurring.
Yeah, the evolution of Freddy's makeup and glove and the decade-long phenomena of how this child killer infected pop culture. And yeah, in the previous alleged final installment, he was straight up a Warner Brothers cartoon by anyone that had, you know, paid attention and can admit it. But in this one, I'm like, no, it's the kid. I don't like the kid. They came out and I feel differently. But that's just me and children. What about you, Max?
I'm gonna say it's my third favorite of the franchise.
Okay, cool.
I would say I'd do it 1-3 New Nightmare.
All right.
That'd be my ranking. I like it. I love I love the meta commentary on horror done well. And it's scary when reality blurs to me. I like a nice delineation between the dream world and the real world. And this movie flipped it on its head. That Wes Craven guy, he's scary.
Yeah, I think two pieces I really like about it. If I remember correctly, I don't remember the very specific story, but Heather did actually have a stalker.
Mm-hmm.
So having that in this film, that just adds an element of fear, and kudos to her for acting it while also living it.
She had an active stalker while they were making this movie.
It was before.
Before.
Yeah.
I think in the timeline, it was around the time that she was working on a sitcom called Just the Ten of Us, which also featured the actress from Elm Street 4 that turned into a cockroach. So watching that as a youngin, I was like, are we not going to mention this connection here between these actresses? Yes, I'm old as fuck, everyone.
Well, I think also it's a very specific with it being the fourth one. People may not have gone that far into the series, but they're more relevant to us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a part about it that I love and I think was done really well. And also the fact that Wes Craven was able to kind of go back to his roots and intention with Freddy Krueger in making him much more menacing, not as, you know, I mean, we all of us in here love Dream Warriors. We love, you know, just welcome to primetime, bitch, or whatnot. Like, we love it. But it's nice to go back to what Wes Craven was intending and making him a lot more menacing, darker. His appearance, I thought, was done really well. So it was nice to experience that too, to see what Wes wanted and what he did with the first one. Honestly, he was significantly more menacing in the first one and just gets sillier and sillier, and that's naturally going to happen in a lot of franchises. But yeah, I thought it was done extremely well. I find it incredibly rewatchable, probably because I don't find the kid annoying like Rick does. And I think it's kind of nice to have a kid involved too, because of the fact that Freddy Krueger started as a child killer. Like, I love, you know, the first one and how it deals with, you know, the sins of the parents will lie on the children or their children, but they're teenagers now. There's something about remembering that this is someone who slaughtered, you know, kids. Killing teens is sad too, but kind of going back to a child being haunted by Freddy is a really cool element.
Well, Killing Teens played by people in their 20s is far sexier. No, I gotta admit, a decade of special effects advancement puts this ahead of the original in that aspect. They were able to utilize things. And that's why I still feel old as Robert Englund is, he could do one more. I'd like to see what they could pull off with today's effects in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and make it as easy as possible for Robert to deal with sitting in that makeup chair for as many hours as he did, which can't be fun at this age, but hey, it got you paid, made you a household name. Because before that, I just knew you as a sensitive alien in V. Yes, I'm old as fuck.
All right, and the scientist in Never Too Young to Die.
I don't know that one.
Oh, or John Stamos plays a super spy, and his girlfriend is Vanity. Oh no, is it? Yeah, Vanity, not. Yeah, Vanity, capital V Vanity.
Yes, of former paramour and protege of Prince,
Yeah,
singer of the hit Sex Shooter.
it's true. Which was then covered by Apollonia, Prince's second paramour.
Yep. And then I don't know, my favorite Vanity Project, pun intended, Last Dragon, doesn't get much better than that in her filmography, in my opinion. Particularly because I haven't heard about this John Stamos movie. Any other,
Out. It's great. Oh, New Nightmare?
thoughts on the new Nightmare?
Yeah, I also remember John Saxon really,
Yes.
really killed it in this one. He's always good, but I think he does a really good job of shifting from playing kind of like a concerned friend to like actually thinking that he's Heather's father.
That was a great change. That scene with the switch in wardrobe of like, why are you calling me John? And then she calls him daddy. And then it's like, it's official. You're in this cinematic dream world, and now it's fucking go time. Nancy Thompson's back and ready to throw those fucking hands at Freddy as my original final girl, if I remember correctly. So she'll always have a place in my heart, in that spot, that coveted spot. I don't know how much they coveted, to be honest with All right, Max, what's your first film that you're bringing to this
Yeah.
conversation?
The first one I'm bringing is one. It's from 2014. It's called Starry Eyes. Did you guys see this one?
I saw this one. I don't remember it very well. I only saw it once. Please refresh my memory.
Starry. I'm trying. I'm looking to see if I knew anybody in this movie, but basically it's like an indie horror film. I don't remember how I first came across it. I think it was just like on HBO at 2 a.m. or something. But basically it's about this young woman in LA, and she wants to be an actress, and basically gets auditions for a studio run by like worshipers of the devil, and just gradually she gives up more and more of her life, and spoilers, just goes on a murder spree because she wants to be famous that badly, and her body's transforming. It's good. I really liked it. I never see really people talking about it very much, but it's just kind of this her doing whatever it takes for her, and her friends being like, it's not worth it, her being like, yes, it is. And then by the
Yeah,
end, she transfers into like a gross demon, and she's never been happier.
the only person that I recognized when I watched this movie was Noah Sagan, who was in Knives Out. He was in Blood Relatives,
Oh, nice.
and I've really enjoyed his work. But in watching it, it did have that feel of a movie that I love from the 90s called Where the Day Takes You, about homeless kids in LA, but with kind of the morality of Showgirls, neither which really apply to this movie. Those are just the reference points in my cinematic history that I thought of while watching this movie, that yeah, you got somebody that wants this goal, is gonna do anything they possibly can to achieve it. But unlike in Showgirls, our protagonist in this film, I don't recall her really realizing that the goal wasn't worth what she did to get there.
Yeah, I don't really know. I think she learns the wrong lesson, but I do think literally every other character is like, objectively, this is a bad idea. And she's like, no, it's a gateway part or something like that. It's like every move, she's like, no, this is gonna work out. And then I guess it sort of does, but she's now like a little, I think, spoilers, I think like all of her skin falls off and she has to like, I think that the demon guy gives her like a wig and some false teeth and she like pops it in. She's like, yeah, I look great. And then the movie ends.
Ready for my close-up. I may need to watch this again.
Basically.
Chelsea, have you seen this one?
I have. I need to watch it again. I remember stumbling upon it. I think it might have been on HBO or Shudder or something, a couple of years ago. And I think it was a question at final exam trivia too, because I remember it being brought up there. And seeing it then a few months ago, I was like, oh, I got to rewatch that because I do love the sheer commitment to that she displays, and nothing can stop her. And I didn't want anything to stop her. I was like, you do it, girl. Like, whatever. If this is what you want to do, no one can convince you otherwise. Pull that hair out and go crazy. It's just I don't know if it's supposed to, I'm sure it was, and I just can't remember discussions on it, but any commentary on how brutal that business is and what you have to do often to make it, when it's even a role or project that's not worth it, or that's so meaning not meaningless, but not necessarily something that will get you where you want to go. I thought it was really interesting, and I remember it being quite gory, so I need to go back and watch it.
Sometimes you gotta revisit, and that always helps. And I like when someone kicks off, like, oh yeah, I only watched that the one time. I didn't hate it, so I'll definitely give it another whirl and see what's doing and have fun with it. Just cause. And yeah, Max, if you've never been to final exam horror trivia at Rock Bar, free plug for them. They're a good time. It's down in the in the it's not quite the Bowery. It's more Chelsea area. No pun intended. That's a good time. And
And
the it's
where I
expert
live.
level trivia. And even if you don't win, at the very least, you end up walking out with a list of movies. Like, gotta check this one out. Gotta check that one out. Speaking of something that was an answer, to one of their questions. That was my first film. And it's the movie that kind of inspired this topic. Not that long ago, I'm choogling around on Shudder, and I see a movie that I haven't watched in almost 30 years since it first came out on VHS. And I'm like, let's give this another whirl. And I appreciated it more this time. And it's the movie Mute Witness. Have either of you seen this one?
No, I don't.
No, I don't know if I've even heard of it.
No,
All
all
right.
right.
It's this movie where they're this American filmmaker. He's kind of like a spoiled kind of director. He's working with his girlfriend. I forget what her position is. And the effects person is a mute, hence in the title, Mute Witness. The director kind of reminds me of, like, what if the kid that played the teenage version of C in A Bronx Tale were a douchebag? But it's not his movie. I guess he's the comedic element of the movie. The mute young lady, after they wrap up production for the day, has to go back onto the stage. She's played by Marina Zudina in this film. The movie is getting played in a former Soviet country. I don't think they specify which, but she goes back into the studio to get a prop that they need, can't leave it in the studio overnight, and realizes that some of the crew members are using the stage after hours to not just film porn, they're filming snuff porn. And she witnesses this murder. And the people making the movie aren't a fan of having witnesses to this crime. So this mute lady now has to survive the night with these people who are clearly connected to the Russian mafia, trying to find her, eliminate her, get any evidence destroyed. And the leader of the Russian mob is Alec Guinness, aka Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't even like Star Wars, but I just find that hilarious. Obi-Wan Kenobi is making Eastern Bloc snuff porn
It does
in the
explain a lot about
90s.
Obi-Wan, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't like this in 1995. It made me feel icky. And that scene should make you feel icky. But the rest of it, I'm like, oh, this was ahead of its time. I kind of felt about this movie watching it recently the way I felt about In the Mouth of Madness by John Carpenter. I'm like, I wasn't ready yet. And now, many years later, I am. So,
So is
based
she like
on.
taking them out like during the night?
Pardon?
Is she just like taking them out during the night,
A
like
lot of
getting
running, a lot of toughs questioning her colleagues because they're easier to find than this mute gal. And some people consider it a comedy. I find that the icky scene definitely negated the comedy on the first viewing, but when the heavies are kind of trashing the director and his girlfriend's apartment, looking to find where our mute witness is, there are downstairs neighbors trying to sleep, banging on the ceiling with a broomstick,
Oh, too
and
real.
yeah.
Too real. That's terrifying.
So, based on the gibberish way that I described this film, doesn't interest either of you.
It does, and I looked it up while you're talking. I learned a piece of trivia. Did you know Alec Guinness's scenes were filmed separately 10 years before they made the rest of the movie?
Yes,
What?
I did.
What? Huh? Explain why.
Apparently, he ran to the director. This is just what I'm getting on Wikipedia. And the director's like, "Would you be willing to do a cameo in a movie I'm making?" And Alec Guinness was like, "Sure," and did it for free. So he's like, "Oh, you seem like a nice guy." And then the director sat in that footage for 10 years and was like, "I'm going to make a snuff porn movie and make you the villain of this. And it will be one of your last credited roles, Sir Alec Guinness."
It's very much Lugosi, and I think what was it, Plan 9 from Outer Space?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like it, yes, I got this footage. There you go.
That's amazing. I'm even more excited to watch it now with that
Yeah.
perspective
I
because
just want to see,
the plot
yeah,
was
how it fits
interesting.
in. If it's just him being like, "Well, you're eggs," and then he's like, and then it's just hit the back of his head murdering somebody.
Right, he's just looking in the wrong
Yeah,
direction. Like,
it's not quite that. It's you won't be able to tell the time difference of his two scenes in the movie, but I do like to think that the director of this movie is like, trying to get funding. It's like, well, we'd give you more money if you had a star. And he's like, you know what? I've got Alec Guinness.
I think that is a literal line from Plan 9 from Outer Space. Or from Ed Wood when he's making Plan 9, where he's like, "I got Bela Lugosi. Like, isn't he dead? Like, not quite."
Not
I
really.
remember, like, but what if you had a star? Then you got crap with a star.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, it sounds interesting. I'm glad you prepared us for what sounds like a very uncomfy and icky scene and to get through that. But yeah, I'd
Once you
never
get
heard
through
of it.
that, and that's actually a similar feeling for the last film that I'm bringing to this conversation, but on very different ends of the spectrum. Yeah, once you get through that, you can just get into your regular dodgem kind of th 90s thriller, and not usual sexy 90s thriller.
Do you love a 90s thriller?
Yes, that's. This is, yeah. And after that, it's like, okay, I can handle all the rest of this, no problem. For anyone that needs trigger warnings, as well, you should. Because, yeah, it felt very ick that first time in '95. Yeah, let's
Interesting.
swing it back around.
That first time in '95.
The Rick Guzman story.
The Rick Guzman story.
Chelsea, what you got next for us?
All right, so the next one I have is not very popular, but I love it. It's
that's the Chelsea Bennington story.
Yes, it's objectively a bad film, but subjectively a great piece of art. Urban Legends Final Cut. Have either of you seen that?
I watched it once on your recommendation.
Oh, right. I forgot. I did tell you to watch it.
And all I remember is Joey Lawrence.
You just remember Joey Lawrence.
That's all I got. I forgot. I remember I didn't dislike it.
Right.
I didn't like it as much as the first one. How could you?
Oh, of course.
But like all I remember is like, why the fuck is Joey Lawrence here?
Because it was 1999 and he had nowhere else to be. So he was
true.
True. He was cold and outside. They had to let him into the studio and they started making the movie. And they told him, get down, we're making a movie. But he was so cute, they had to leave him in.
You're like, aw, you can stay. Max, have you seen it?
I have not seen this one.
But you've seen Urban Legend, right?
I've seen the original.
Okay. So Urban Legend's Final Cut came out in 99. And what it's about is... it doesn't have, you know, it has a small, well, not even a handful, like one or two people from the first one in it. The security guard, especially, who was fantastic. But it's about a group of film students, and there's an award they're trying to get, and it's called the Hitchcock Award. And it's basically an award that guarantees you're definitely going to have a film career, you know, if you get this award out of film school. And the main character is making a serial killer film based off of, you know, deaths that happen via, you know, urban legends. And chaos ensues. This one does not have nearly as many deaths based off of urban legends. It becomes a little bit more straightforward, like slasher at the end. One of my favorite trivia pieces about it is nobody was dying soon enough in it. So they inserted this character who was going to be in one scene and just never again. They inserted her death scene, and hers is an urban legend. She has, you know, her kidneys. She wakes up in a ice bath and her kidneys have been removed. But they never talk about her death. They never bring her up. Like, it was solely put in there because they were like, it's been 40 minutes and no one's dead. Can you please put in a death scene?
Studio notes after test screenings.
Yeah. And so it's funny. But then anyway, there's a lot of like soap opera storyline to it as well. Like, so this man dies and his twin brother appears and is in the rest of the movie. A twin brother that you didn't know he had. You have young Eva Mendes in it. It's a really fun time. And then the ending is just perfect. Do you mind if I spoil it, Max?
Not at all.
Because it's still worth it. It's a fun watch, even if you know what's happening. You know, the professor was the killer all along. And at the end, after he's been figured out and he's taken to this kind of mental institution hospital, his nurse is Rebecca Gayhart from the first one, the killer in Urban Legend. And it's just so hokey and campy and fantastic. It's a really fun movie. Just like these film students making a horror film, getting killed one by one. Kind of. They mostly all die at the end. It is a movie that doesn't have a lot of deaths until you get to like the last 30 minutes of the movie. But it's a really fun time.
So it has kind of like an Avengers ending where like the killer from the first one is like, I'm assembling a team of urban legend based murderers. Yes.
That's a lot. Like, as much as I loved that ending, Now that Chelsea refreshed my memory, that's a lost opportunity by whatever studio made this film that they didn't go full urban legend canon leading to like an urban legend end game kind of thing.
Yeah, it is a shame because I know there was a direct to video sequel called like Urban Legend Bloody Mary, and that one I believe was like paranormal, like it had nothing to do with like these first two, which are really, you know, like 90s slashers. They tried to, I think, because it was in like 2005, I think is when it was, they were kind of diving into what was popular at the time. But I would have loved that, Rebecca Gayhart coming over there and being like, I'm assembling a team. Show me your best urban legend kills.
Well, if Jason Blum is going to keep remaking and relaunching established intellectual properties, look in this direction, because, you know, there's potential there.
I'm sure the rights are pretty gettable.
Oh, yeah. Must be.
At the very least, Max, we're giving you a bunch of movies to watch in your downtime. What you got next for us?
All right, I went real real sleazy with the next one, the 70s. I went for the Last House on Dead End Street.
Oh, I've not seen this one.
AKA The Fun House. Have you heard of this one? It's
no.
If you ever watch Cathode Ray Cinema,
no.
They love this movie. This winds up in a lot of their horror rotations. It's like a pretty gross, brutal, like 1970s like exploitation movie about a frustrated film student who's like, oh, all people want is sex and violence, so we'll just make snuff films. And he like makes a Charles Manson-esque cult and starts like blackmailing like CD producers, and it's I think the original, and then like the behind the scenes stuff, which is not in the movie but was interesting, was everyone in it was under a pseudonym, so up until like 10 years ago no one knew who made it, and there was rumors that it was a real snuff film for a while, and first cut I think premiered at like 3.5 hours long and was like super artsy, brutal, and the distributor rightfully was like, nobody wants this for 3.5 hours.
God.
It's, if you like 70s, it's well made too, but if you like 70s sleaze of just like this cult people just brutalizing people on like, you know, old like stolen from NYU film stock that they were reusing for free, that's this movie.
It is on Tubi. I'm so interested.
I was just about to say, just looking it up, it's on Tubi, and I will probably watch this now.
That is so funny.
Just to enlighten me. And who knows, we might do a follow-up episode on this film. Yeah. And these are why these conversations are important, for somebody to turn us on to shit that we didn't know existed.
I do miss, you know, and this will never, we just live in a world where this can't happen again, but the times where you could have a movie like this come out, or even when Blair Witch Project came out, and it's like, oh my God, I think this is real. This is insane. Like, we're just too advanced in tech and social media and, you know, lack of privacy and stuff, that I think that'll never really happen again. But I love the idea that the fact that since they were under like pseudonyms and seeing the trivia, people were like, oh my God, I think they were actually murdered.
Yeah, actually.
I love the sensationalism of it. It's so fun.
It wouldn't happen organically anymore. It would take work. Like, you need contracts to get participants to say like, okay, we're making this movie, we're going to try to convince people that it's real. You need to fuck off for like X amount of months and do that.
I think we're too jaded, honestly, though, and too cynical now, that even if you did all of that work, I think they would know, like, this wouldn't come out if these people were actually killed. Like, I think the world's just too different. And I mean, I just don't think it could happen.
I think if you get the right number of young people fooled to post about it, that it's real, it could just take off. But you'd have to be somewhat insidious of a marketer to make that happen.
I would say it's usually the old people that fall for that shit. So like on Facebook and stuff, the stories that they believe. I think
I think the shit that they fall for is nowhere near believable for anyone with intelligence.
Yeah, very
That's why I put the onus on young people. They can go, well, we've done our, and I realize this is a bad phrase, and we've done our research and we can't find this person. They haven't posted anything on their Instagram in like a year and a half.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, check it. I mean, trigger warnings galore for this one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good to know. Good,
just, yeah, about every possible one. But yeah, but if you're into like sleaze, it really is about as quintessential a like 70s like sleazy exploitation movie as I've seen.
I do like when I went to the IMDb page and just like scrolling through, and you know, you have trivia, goofs, and quotes. The first quote is, "I'm directing this fucking movie." And I'm like, all right.
That would be Chelsea's directing style.
It would be, honestly.
So let's go from something gross to my second movie.
Ooh.
Which is, you know, a little bit gross, but so, so wonderful. Even considering that I first watched this film on a New Year's Eve when I was sick as fuck, staying home while everybody else is going out and having a good time. And I'd heard about this film and I finally got to watch it. And I thought it was brilliant right from that first viewing, even when you're infirm. And I've talked about it on this show before, but I'll talk about it again. It's One Cut of the Dead. Max, have you seen this one? Have you heard
of
this one?
No, I don't think I know it.
Please, please, please check it out. I'm pretty sure Chelsea has seen it. At the very least, she's heard me talk about it. Right. You've got a crew of Japanese filmmakers making a zombie movie. And then zombies actually show up. And then about 15 minutes in, I realize what the title means. I realize there must be digital trickery involved, but it's all one shot. They have not cut the camera yet. And it keeps going and going. And then the credits roll and I go, that's really fucking short. And it turns out when this movie had its festival premiere, a lot of people left at that point because they saw credits and they thought the movie was over. No, now the movie completely switches to its second half and you see exactly what happened. There was a film crew with the task of doing a live online zombie film. You learn about this crew and how they made it happen. And during that live webcast, everything that can go wrong will go wrong. So now you're seeing it from the other perspective of how this group of people is trying to pull this off successfully. And it clicked right to my improv brain, the way we have each other's backs, the way we carry each other through our scene, the way that we succeed or fall together. And again, bringing it back to Megawatt at the Magnet, Max, you've been there. You've probably seen some sets where you're having a good time, you're watching this team, you're laughing, but everything seems kind of disconnected until some brilliant motherfucker says one line that ties everything that you've just seen for about half an hour and links it all together, and then the theater blacks out. You go, they fucking did it. How the fuck did they do that? That's this movie.
All right, that sounds great. I'll check that. Even I'm cooked even by the poster.
Yeah, it's a pretty good poster. I like I love summaries, like whoever wrote this. Things go badly for a hack director and film crew shooting a low-budget zombie movie in an abandoned World War II Japanese facility. I just love they just went ahead and were like, a hack director, like, Jesus.
Yeah, got him.
Got him, yeah.
That is true. That is addressed.
I want more summaries of films where it's like, this piece of shit has to go through.
Look at this pig man making a movie. Screw him.
Well, how much can you edit on IMDb?
What, Rick? Sorry.
How much can you edit on IMDb?
I don't know, but I may try. I'm just going to go to like...
Could you go to previous Weinstein productions? Like, funded by pigmen.
Yeah.
And assorted human trash. Pretty good.
I mean, that does honestly sell the movie pretty well to me. That is like a nice 1970s, like funded by pigmen and assorted trash. Filmed on location in Newark, New Jersey, where life is cheap. So I was in Newark last night, so it's just on the top of my mind.
Still haunted.
Still haunted.
Because Chelsea, you've seen this, right?
I don't think I remembered you talking about it, and I see it's on AMC Plus, so. All right. Wow. I'll watch it.
Oh, AMC. Sorry, I was thinking TCM when you said that. But good for them. They made it on Turner Classic.
Ben Mankiewicz comes out and goes, this act director.
We're doing Maltese Falcon and then One Cut of the Dead.
You're watching Turner Classic.
You're watching Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, I guess Rob Zombie did host a show on Turner Classic Movies for like 2 years. So I guess it's not out of the question.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, expanding your audience.
Yeah.
Showbiz. So Chelsea, you've only got two for us, right?
I did. So if y'all have some more, I'm happy to hear them. I just wanted to be good on time, but we have time. So
Max, you got another? You got a third for
us? Yeah, I have a classy one and I got a trashy one.
Ooh.
Yeah, we'll do.
Your last one was trashy, so let's go classy.
Classy, all right. 1960s Peeping Tom by Michael Powell. Yes.
Another one that I've not seen, but I've heard about.
You haven't seen Peeping Tom?
I haven't.
It's good.
I heard it kicked off the slasher.
It did. It
genre, but I've never. It's also on Tubi, so I can rectify that too.
If you went to film school, which I was, my minor was originally it was cinema studies, and I took a class called Reading Films, and it was enough to make me drop the minor because it was just a bunch of like douchey film kids who talk about why American Beauty is such a great film, or that just discovered Reservoir Dogs. It was very annoying. But we watched like some pretty good movies. And one of them that we talked about was Peeping Tom, because that was the start of the slashers. Anyway, not to steal Max's thunder.
No,
but
no,
it's a great movie.
Phrased it more eloquently than I could have ever dreamed.
Well, give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean,
convince me more to watch this movie than I'm already convinced to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's
convince me to watch it before I watched the previous film you mentioned.
Sure. I mean, so it's first off, it's directed by Michael Powell, who is one of the the super famous auteur cinemists. He made like Life and Death of Colonel Blimp with Powell and Pressburger. I Know Where I'm Going. When I worked at a video store, it was the boss's favorite movie, so that should carry some weight. And then he went off and made this movie Peeping Tom, about a kind of damaged, emotionally distant amateur photographer who wants to film women dying, and it ruined his career because people, when you made such lovely, nice, slow movies and now you're doing this, and critical reappraisal looked at the themes of voyeurism and longing, but really it's just about this kind of damaged guy. He's a very it's 1960, I guess. Maybe that's a little before Psycho. Around Psycho?
I feel like Psycho might be a couple of years after.
Yeah. It's thematically similar to what Psycho... I mean, as far as that subject-wise, but like Norman Bates is kind of a retelling of this character, where a guy who kind of just is in his own world, sort of stepping through ours, but that is his needs destroy us.
So Psycho actually premiered 2 months after Peeping Tom.
Oh, so they were being made at the same
time. Yeah, they were in the same. That's so interesting. I didn't realize how close they were.
Parallel thinking. Ooh la la.
Yeah. America was ready for serial killing.
They were ready to watch those women just get killed. Yeah. Like, they were over it.
Now, do you think, since you're more knowledgeable than me, Max, do you think that Hitchcock's reputation as a horror and thriller director saved him from the scrutiny that this other director ended up having after making Peeping Tom.
I've never thought of it, but yeah, I think so. I guess Hitchcock did have the reputation of being like a director of thrillers, and Powell and Pressburger did a bit more on like kind of whimsical, dreamlike, almost romance movies. So that could be why. Also, maybe in those 2 months, people were shocked once, and the second time they're like, oh, we can handle Psycho now.
Could be, could be. Wonderful. All right. For my last film. This was a movie that I was reluctant to watch because of the setup. It's The Taking of Deborah Logan. You have some academics filming an elderly woman who is apparently suffering from dementia. She's agreed in one of her lucid moments to be a part of this, what is eventually a found footage film, be studied and recorded in order to, if the mutually beneficial thing, the students get financial assistance for their study, and the woman and her daughter, they also get financial assistance, which will let them keep their home. And my grandmother had dementia before she died, and I was always reluctant to watch this movie because of it, because that'll fuck you up. And you don't want to see anybody suffer like that, even in a fictional scenario. So the beginning of this film, if you haven't seen it, it's tough. And then it gets into the supernatural aspect. And I'm like, I can handle this all day, every day, going forward. Everything, it runs smoothly now. We're great. Monsters and things that go bump in the night that aren't, you know, the old lady just losing her mind. Okay, cool. Whatever things that they find in this found footage movie, I got this. No problem now. Have either of you seen this one?
I have. Yes. Yeah.
What did you think?
I think you bring up a good point, because I'm terrified of getting old. I really am. Of like, you know, not hitting my 40s or 50s or anything like that, but when I'm old and like losing my mind, to be quite frank. Like I've seen it happen, and it's so heartbreaking and so tragic, and I don't want to dwell on it too much. But I remember when I first started that movie, and I knew it was supposed to get like a little supernatural, like really freaky, but the first part of it, I thought, I just don't want to watch this. If this is just her going insane, I can't. And then you start getting some of those jump scares and different things in it, and I felt much more comfortable. So Rick, I think I had a similar experience to you, even though I know it hit you on a significantly more personal
note. I'm not alone.
Yeah, and for me, it's just, I don't think it's a phobia. I mean, everybody is scared of getting old. It's definitely not like a unique thing. But when I see, you know, people going through, you know, those diseases when they're older, I'm like, oh God, if that happens to me, that, anyway.
You don't want to be around for that. I think... And I still got elderly people in my family that I love. I wish they could be around forever, but they're not in the best of shape. And I definitely don't have the courage to live that long. Like, I'd rather get hit by a bus, bolt of lightning.
Yeah, I want to hang on and eventually be possessed by a snake demon, unhinge my jaw, and maybe eat somebody if I can. That's kind of the dream for me.
Dream we all dream of, Max.
Yeah.
Dream we all dream of.
Yeah, I know. I'm too on brand for me. But yeah, that's just... So what? I found this an aspirational film in that regard, where I was like, yeah, she did it. She's out there.
It's just like Starry Eyes. It's just like, yes,
yeah.
Girl. Keep going.
As an actor, I debase myself so often. I'm like, I'm sure it's worth it for this, you know, this volunteer role. I'm sure it'll come back around. It's like the end of Grease when the car flies off. I'm like, yes.
Speaking of as an actor, Max, you've got something coming up that everybody should check out because it's fun. What you
Oh
what
yeah.
Please tell our listeners where they can find you if they want to find you.
Oh yeah, I'm on, well, I have a website now. It's maxwellbank.net that has some links and how to contact me. But then yeah, next or in June on I'm looking up the exact dates. June, I think 2nd and 9th. June 9th and June 12th at the Tribeca Film Festival. A film I shot with some cool people, including this guy Will Janowitz, who was on The Sopranos, and Marriott Booth, who was on the show FBI. We play three siblings dealing with the loss of our mother and a parrot that we inherit together, and comedy ensues. And that's premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival on June 9th and June 12th. So come on through if that's your bag. And if it's not, come on anyway.
Yeah, speaking of someone who went to the Tribeca Film Festival a lot before Rona, it's always a good time to see things before a lot of people get to see them, and you're there not only with the people that made the movie, but you're there with people that love movies, which kicks it up. You're not going to have assholery and texting, chatting. It's one of the better film experiences if you love cinema to go and do that. And the fact that it started to as a festival to help after some awful shit went down in our city, it's a wonderful thing that it's still going and giving people opportunities and to show films that sometimes, let's be honest, you don't get to see anyplace else.
Yeah, that's the fun part of film festivals.
Any other
Actually,
social medias that you want to plug for the people that want to find you, or just go to the website?
oh, I'm also, I mean, there's links, but also, yeah, I'm at that Max person. Yeah. I also also in can I do two more quick plugs?
You can do as many as you want.
Heck yeah. Starting May 30th and running the first 4 weekends in June, if you come up to Riverside Park at the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, I'm in a production of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged. It's a donation-based show, so pay what you can or what you want to, and then enjoy, 90 minutes of slapstick comedy outside in the nice weather. And then, yeah, every Thursday at 10 o'clock at UCB, I'm the co-host of Cage Match.
Nice. Chelsea, where can the people find you if they want to find you?
They can find me on Instagram or Twitter, Chelsea Bennington. I am there. That's it.
Cool. Check out Spooky Doings Improv on Facebook for that will be the place where as soon as we book more shows at Young Ethel's, they'll get announced there first. Max sounds like he'll be busy, so you might not see him with us for a while. But our door is always open because now you're one of ours.
Yeah.
We have claimed you. Just
Goo
because you're
gobble. Yeah.
not available doesn't mean you're not out of the loop.
It's yeah.
You're still there.
I bear the mark.
Yes.
We do brand people
We do. We
in
do.
Spooky Doings, in case people were wondering.
You can check out Spooky Doings on Improv, and I'm at Rick Guzman 718 on the Tweety, mostly just espousing my opinions on horror movies and wrestling, in that kind of thing. But also, one more last thing before we sign off. Max, why do you think it is that you and I keep bumping into each other around different spots in Manhattan?
I think it's a fate and like a first act setup for the horror movie of our lives.
Yes.
I'm
I
sure there's some.
do.
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I do randomly, like whenever I see Rick, I usually hear, I saw Max at this place. And I'm like, do you see him more than you see me? Do you see him more than you see your girlfriend? Like, Max is just always where you are.
Yes, but
Yeah, I
it's
know.
never planned.
Yes, or is it?
Not on my part.
Oh yeah, maybe I'm just.
Ooh,
Well,
he's
I
getting
know your
spooky.
wife has family in the Carl Place area where I used to work at a Tower Records. So if she shopped at that Tower Records from 1997 to 2000, I apologize. I was an asshole to everyone. So maybe that's it. Is this some long con revenge plot because I made fun of your wife if she wanted to buy the single of Barbie Girl by Aqua? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I started doing improv in the hopes that eventually I'd work my way up the food chain until I got to you.
Does my apology save my life in any way?
It does. I'm dulling my knives right now. You know, I don't need them. I don't need them for this.
That just makes them hurt more, man.
That's the twist.
It is. And this has been a lovely chat, a lovely episode. And I thank both of you for making me smile on a Sunday. It's a good time. And for all of our listeners, in the meantime and in between time, stay good, stay healthy, and stay spooky.